On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys. It's happening. Oh, my God, guys. Oh, my God. I wish you all were here.
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No.
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
Let's be honest, I'm probably staying home. I'm already in my pajama pants. I'm almost a beer deep. I'm not going anywhere.
I'm not sure what the f*** this is. I'm about to find out.
This is Tall Can Audio.
Hello and welcome to Tall Can Audio. I am your occasional host, Michaela Schreider. That's right, you're stuck with me again for this episode. And I am joined by my occasional guest, Matt Robinson. Matt, how are you?
Gotta tell you, I kind of have a bone to pick with you before we go any further.
Oh, God.
You've started a trend here that I don't think I like. And the last time you were on, we talked a lot of CFL, but you opened the show by calling me Matthew.
Yes, I did.
And on Monday, episode 760, if people haven't had a chance to check it out yet, we had Andy Nita from the Nita Beer Company on. Believe me, you're going to be hearing more about them in a second. He, for some reason, also started the show by saying, hello, Matthew, thank you for having me, and ended the show. Again, thanks for having me, Matthew. And I don't know what's happening. This has never been a thing before, but it's snowballing. And even my mom has long since stopped calling me Matthew unless she has a major bone to pick with me. And I'm not sure. I don't hate Matthew, but it's odd. It's weird, and it seems to be snowballing. So I'm pinning that on you for now, because it had been a long time since I'd heard it, and you were the first one to do it. But now it's gaining steam, and I think we gotta find a way out.
You should absolutely pin that on me. That is 100% my fault. I did make a conscious effort to call you Matt this time around, if that helps.
I appreciate that. And I did wonder, the last time, if it came from, and I don't know how it shows up in your contacts, people call people whatever they want. I'm sure my emails come from Matthew Robinson.
That's exactly it. And I'm going to let you know on a little secret, despite how much I was on the radio before COVID-19, yeah. I would forget my mother's name if I was introducing her for an interview. Like, I have to have whoever I'm introducing or throwing to, I have to have their name written in front of me, because there's something about a mic in my face where I just forget everything and I'll mess it up. Right. So I was looking at your email that you just sent me, and I saw Matthew, and it just came out, and I don't even think I heard myself or caught myself doing it. And then you called me on it. I was like, oh, no, that's right. That's not what we call him.
Well, and it is. It's entirely my fault, because I said it, obviously, when my emails go out. It says from Matthew, but I fill out this stuff like you're filling out official forms or whatever. I don't know. For some reason, I have my email set to come from Matthew, but nobody calls me Matthew. So it was just odd, but I did set myself up for it. But now that it's happening more and more, I am going to throw it back on you just a little bit. So
I have more influence than I thought.
Apparently.
I called you Matthew once, and apparently, like, it's stuck.
It's already.
I am sorry. Like, apparently, I carry great power.
Well, yeah, and with great power comes great responsibility. So I'm going to have
that
to ask you to reel it in a little bit and get that under control.
I will fix this. I will fix this.
Okay.
Speaking of great responsibility, I have the great responsibility of hosting this show today. Thank you very much, Matt, for bestowing that responsibility upon me. And as Matt mentioned, you can go back to the previous episode and listen to Andy Nita from Nita Beer Company. And speaking of Nita Beer Company, we are going to be cracking into a Nita beer right now. And Matt, I'm going to let you tell the good listener why.
Okay. So this is day one of the Nita beer holiday calendar. I've seen it called like 17 different things over the years. I've always considered it, just because of how I grew up, to be an advent calendar. I've seen them call it an advent calendar, but I've also seen them go out of their way to call it a holiday calendar, don't leave anybody out kind of thing. Whatever you want to call it, that's cool with me. But essentially, this is their advent calendar. I don't know how else to describe it. 24 days, 24 different craft beers from 23 different breweries, which makes me laugh. And Andy did admit on the show, he's like, we do all the work. We do all the organizing. We pull it all together. I'm putting two beers in. We're going first and last. We're going to be December 1st. We're going to be December 24th. I think that's totally legit. But this is night one, as we sit here and record this, of the advent calendar. And so we cracked it open. I know you've got one as well over there. And he mentioned, I want to get your take, just before we crack into them. This is twice now that I've delayed your ability to crack your beer, and I'm sorry.
That's okay.
He said he's had, out of about 1,500 of these calendars that they've made up, 3 complaints. So that's not a bad ratio. But people were
not bad. I want to know who's complaining about 24 days of beer, but sure.
He said that there are some people out there who are disappointed in the packaging. And I guess I get that. You know, maybe, you know, in a typical advent calendar, you get to pick a door open each day, or they were suggesting that maybe around the outside you could pick into it or whatever. And he's like, we'll consider it in the future. But it's hard, right? And very few people are able to put the full case in the fridge to begin with. Like, a lot of people will grab 6 and throw them in the fridge or whatever and work through it. But that's apparently the only complaint they've had, is I was really hoping for more of a... And so the person, I guess, had brought it back and just said, I don't want to do it this way. And he said, all right, refunded the money. They have a waiting list of like 500 people who want these. So he wasn't really worried about... You know, he said, I will take it seriously. But I wondered, when you cracked into it, just sort of knowing the concept, was there disappointment, or did it kind of look like what you expected it would look like?
I'll be honest with you, I didn't think that much about it. I opened it and I saw, so on top of the 24 cans of beer,
yeah,
there's like a almost like little postcards that you rip off for each day.
Right.
And it's like got a little graphic.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little graphic on it. There's actually coupons for various local businesses on the back. It's very cool.
Yeah.
I didn't think, I was like, oh, that's great. Like it was, it's a 2-4 of beer with a different beer behind each one.
Yep.
That's all I care about.
Yep.
Like, sure. I'm not going to lie. I'm a pretty simple girl. I'm very easy to please this way.
Right.
And I'm just like what I'm trying to do, I'm doing my best not to look at the beer ahead of time. I want to be surprised each day.
Yep. I don't want to know.
It sucks because I don't know if you have the same problem, but like, I don't have a fridge big enough to put the whole 2-4 in there. So I have to take it out maybe like midday, put it in the fridge so I can drink it. So I can, you know, do my best to hide it from myself, not look, and put it in the fridge. But I'm going to look. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, no, and I think it's okay if you're doing it like day by day like that, right? Like, but I've in the past grabbed like 6 in past years and put them in, and I am able to, you know, not look directly at it kind of thing. You just make sure you put them in the right order and then each day kind of. But yeah, it's to me, and what Andy said, like, it's about the beer. Like, I'm sorry if you didn't love the cardboard box, but we're shipping beers here. It's hard to, you know, like,
it's an advent calendar of beer. Like, this is the dream. This is a dream come
for
true.
Sure.
I don't, like, again, I can't get inside their head. Who knows what they had in mind. But it's 2020, and the fact that we're even getting an advent calendar this year feels like a blessing.
So tell us about day one, December 1st. Right. What do we got here today?
Today, day one here. Wait, let's do it.
Yeah.
Sweet. Oh, yeah. That's beautiful. So we have, and I think I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Matt, you might need to help me out. A blue amber?
That's what I was going with.
Okay. It's spelled B-L-O-W. So I didn't know if it's blau or blue, but I read the description and it looks like it's named after someone named Lou. Papa Lou. Lou is his name.
Okay.
So I think it's blue amber.
And
so I'm going to give it a little pour.
Okay.
It's very, very dark.
I'm a savage over here. I don't have a pint glass. I've already taken a pull straight off the can. So, well, that's how that goes. Rob, too. Eh? Everybody giving me shit for the way I like to drink my beers. But I you know what? I kind of dig it. I think this is the first amber from the Nita Beer Company. I could be wrong. I've been going in there since their very early days. I'm pretty sure this is the first amber that they've ever had. And on the first pull here, I don't mind it. What's your first impression?
So I'm not going to lie. I'm still in the middle of taking a photo of it because I'm a millennial. And
capture the experience.
For the sake of the show, because I do have to send you a photo after
yes,
this.
Yes, right.
I need to get the perfect angle with mm-hmm. my mic in the background.
Yes.
So I'm going to
God love you.
Contribute to this audio medium and continue just taking one photo if you'll oblige me for 1 second.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that, like I said, Andy said right up front, and in past years it's been the same. He's going December 1st, and he's going December 24th to close it out. I think that's totally reasonable. 23 different breweries still is a hell of an accomplishment, especially when you're asking each of them to kick out like 1500 units. And he said in the, like this year with things being the way they were and people now doing deliveries and stuff that they weren't doing in past years, he had kind of already spoken to some of his partners, said, let's cap it at 2000, let's shoot for 1500, cap it at 2000 and see where it is. And so it came in a little over 1500, units that they shipped. And it is funny to think, right? Like for a lot of small breweries, 1500 cans is no small, that's a whole batch for a lot of people, right? To turn around and put into one of these calendars. And that is where they've gotten hung up in past years is, you know, this certain breweries that just couldn't keep up with the demand when they signed up for this cute little advent calendar. And, oh shit. Like suddenly a couple thousand people want one. It wasn't quite what they expected. And he said that fell down a little bit in the first couple of years. Wasn't an issue this year, but, it's a lot of beer. And, I think it's totally legit that Nita goes on the 1st and the 24th. I'm quite certain Annie Leibovitz over there, you've got your photo taken. What's
yes.
your first
yes,
impression
I do.
Of the, as I just vamp and ramble here?
Like, how long does she take? You know what? I'll admit, I'm not a huge amber yeah. drinker. It's not that I'm not an amber fan. It's just not my go-to beer.
Right.
This is tasty.
It is.
It is. It's very dark in color. Like, it's almost... It almost looks black if you don't have any light on it, but it's got a very brown tinge to it at the bottom, but it's very thick looking,
mm-hmm.
And it's got that toasty kind of caramel aspect you'd expect from an amber, but it's also it's a little sweet but not too much,
right?
And it's got some it's got some very nice flavor. I can
there
say,
is
it's
a couple
a perfect
of notes.
Winter beer.
Yeah, there are a couple notes in there I'm having trouble placing, but. As you said, toasty, that's a nice word for this one. I do enjoy that. Yeah. And especially this time of year, right. It's, that is sort of what I'm looking for. So, day one, it's the, what'd we decide?
Blue amber from
Blue
Beer
amber
Company.
From the
and it, it totally makes sense to me that they're day one and day 24.
Of course.
Like that, they organized it. I think that makes absolute sense. I will tell the good listener and I'm going to shame you to the opposite of shame, but I'm going to use shame. I'm going to shame you a bit on the
shame
podcast.
A lot. I don't know what
I'm going to call you
going.
Out. There's
yeah.
the word.
All right.
I'm going to call you out in a good way because Matt actually bought me this advent calendar from Nita Beer Company. He gave it to me as a quote as a gift for being on the podcast. Like I need any kind of reimbursement for forcing someone to give me the mic so I can rant about sports. He was very kind enough to buy me an advent calendar as a gift, and I think you mentioned on the last show that we exchanged it and had a beer in your parking lot, mm-hmm. socially distanced, obviously.
Yeah.
So that was a very very. I just wanted to. Thank you publicly for that. It's a very, very nice gift. And you are the reason I get to drink one beer a day from now until Christmas. And I have to say, I was super surprised in a good way about the range of craft breweries in this. Like it goes all the way down, I think you were saying, to the Hamilton area.
Yep.
And, there's Kingston Brewery, Spearhead in there.
Couple
there's
Toronto's,
a couple others,
I think.
Yeah. Like it's not just Ottawa area, which I thought was awesome, because there, a lot of people, especially right now, we can't get down to Toronto. You can't. There's a ton of great craft breweries in Toronto and the Toronto area that aren't available in the LCBO, and it's just kind of nice to have an opportunity to try those beers in this format when none of us are really traveling right now.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool.
I haven't decided whether or not I'm going to allow that to stay in the show, what you just did to me.
I'm sorry.
I'm I get big into Christmas. You have done an awesome job. I was trying to think the other day. I think I was thinking out loud on the podcast on Monday as to when you came on the first time. I think it was early summer, maybe June. I can't remember for sure. But you've brought some unique takes here, and I've been thrilled that you've been willing to come on over and over and whatever. So, you know, I was happy to have you on the show, and this is something that we do on this show every year. So I just wanted to make sure you were able to get your hands on one as well. So
that's
all
that
that was.
And I absolutely, like, it is the kindest thing you could have done. Anybody who knows me knows beer is the greatest gift.
It's to anybody, right? You want to get, like, this isn't difficult. I have family members. What do you want for Christmas? I don't, like, what's the brewery in your neighborhood? Send me that six pack and we're done here, right? Like,
craft beer, like, we don't talk enough about how great of a present craft beer makes for all holidays. Like,
right.
If you, again, we're not traveling right now, but if you live in a certain area and you're going to visit a friend in another area, what better gift, if they like beer, than to bring them like a handful of beers from a local craft brewery that they don't have access to?
Right.
From your area. Like, I've always viewed it as kind of like a, you know, here's a gift from my community to yours. Like,
right.
As weird as that sounds, every time I go down to Toronto to visit my friend, again, not right now, I bring some Ottawa beer that I know they can't get, and then they do the same to me.
Of course.
And it's this really cool way of kind of like exchanging some sort of you know, part of your community, and this advent calendar is exactly that, but it stretches so much further, and I really like that.
I do too, and I think you're so right. Like, I've said that exactly what I said a minute ago to a few different people. Like, first of all, you don't have to get me anything, like, this is, but people do what they do, and you have friends that you've known forever. And I've said the beer thing, and they're like, well, it just seems kind of like, I don't know what you'd call it, like minimal or thoughtless, but like, it's the complete opposite. Like, if this is a hobby of mine, this is something I like, and when am I going to be in Hamilton or Waterloo or Halliburton or wherever you have the, if you're going to do something for me, this is something I'm into. Six pints of, or six tall boys of whatever you got going on in your neighborhood that I can't easily get my hands on is appreciated. And I know that's something that you wanted to touch on the show today was this idea of being local right in the holiday season. And it's so easy to jump on Amazon, but as we're all trying to make our way through this, and the craft beer is a nice easy way in. And we talked to Andy a little bit on the show with him on Monday about the fact that more people for a little while were trying local, and he said he thought the surge was as much about fearing about the supply line, right? Like, people just stocking up and making sure they had
beer and toilet paper.
Exactly. But it's important right now, right? And it's easy to fall onto Amazon, and it's safe because you can do it from your home and all these sorts of things. But there are small businesses, whether it be your restaurants, whether it be your local brewery, whether it be just a mom and pop toy store around the corner. Like, this is a year like we've never seen before, and in any way that you can do something to support the guy, your neighbor, or whatever's going on, you know, maybe more important than ever.
Exactly. And I like the conversation you had with Andy, especially. I think it was very eye-opening for me. I was part of the people who thought, oh, craft breweries must be doing so well this year with the delivery and everyone staying home and just ordering beer from local breweries. And of course, it helps to go direct to consumer for these breweries, but they've lost so many restaurant sales, right? And those restaurants, they're also hurting.
And, of course.
You know, I was definitely in that group of people who ordered way more beer than I normally did in the first few weeks of the pandemic. And it, since, you know, there's a few theories I have about why it's kind of tapered off, but I know from my experience, you know, alcohol was kind of how I was dealing with the pandemic in the early days. And then probably around May or June, I finally went, you know what, I need to dial this back. It's probably not the healthiest thing in the world. And I'm certainly packing on the quarantine 15.
Well, so, I loved when you called it that the other day, but there comes a point where from like March till May, no one's had to put on like real pants or jeans.
Yep.
You're like, oh no.
Summer.
What's happening?
Happened.
Right. You're like, I might have to show my face in public here for an outdoor barbecue or something. And you're, oh no, I've had too many local beers delivered to me or something. And but you're so right, and Andy was right. I hadn't considered it. I absolutely was ordering more local craft to be delivered, and I, like you do, right? You kind of feel like, see, there, I'm doing my part. I'm supporting local. It never crossed my mind that, like, oh, like all of the bars that normally buy your kegs are closed. And so my whatever 24 beers I bought today, it helped, but it was a drop in the bucket compared to what they'd lost, right? That just didn't dawn on me.
Yeah, exactly. And I, it was certainly something I hadn't thought about. And, you know, to the local business yes. point, like I think a lot of people are aware of this, especially now. It's always important to support local business, but now more than ever, mm-hmm. it certainly is. And, you know, I'm not going to act like I don't shop on Amazon. I absolutely do. It has been part of my self-care routine yeah. for 2020,
sometimes
buying
myself
something every now and then.
Yeah.
But right now, like what I'm trying to do for this holiday season, and I live in Almont, so anybody who is listening to this who lives in Ottawa, you've probably taken a day trip to Almont very recently to go Christmas shopping, because it feels like the entire city of Ottawa is downtown Almont every Saturday. Mm-hmm. So I'm not shopping there during the weekends because you can't really physically distance on the sidewalk during those times. But, you know, anything that I plan on getting people that I know I can get somewhere downtown, that's where I'm getting it. Like there's a bookstore downtown. Yeah, I know, you know, it's $5 cheaper to buy a book on Amazon. Well, yeah, but Jeff Bezos has enough money.
He's doing okay.
And you're going to be supporting a local business by paying that extra $5.
Yeah.
And I know that, listen, I know people are in varying financial situations sure. because of COVID-19, so I'm not pretending like money is not an issue.
No, there's no guilt. There's no shame. It's just if you can.
No. Exactly. If yeah. you can. If you are financially in a position to support a local business, I think now is the time that it's our responsibility. We want to get our economy built back up, and this is going to be a long process. We don't know. We're still not done. We're still not done this pandemic. We don't even know when we're going to have an opportunity to bounce back.
Right.
And now, at a time where millions of dollars are being tossed around in the economy through Christmas shopping, why not put a big chunk of that into local businesses? And you know, there may not always be an opportunity to do it, but any chance you can to buy a gift from a local store instead of Amazon, buy a gift card to a restaurant.
I was just going to say, yeah.
You know, you may not be able to use, whoever you give it to may not be able to use it right away, but you're giving some money to that restaurant
that
to
restaurant,
make sure that they're going to stay open.
Stay alive, right? Yeah. I have a couple friends who've helped me out a great deal, and they're making it a thing. Like, I've talked about it on the show before. I've had a kidney transplant. My immune system just blows. So I've been very careful about where I go and what. And pharmacies isn't somewhere I want to be. That's where sick people go, and that's where they started doing COVID testing. And that's, I still needed my drugs that are driving down my immune system. I've had a couple friends who would go and pick those up for me. I know there's a place downtown that they love. That's my Christmas gift to them, is a gift certificate to that place. They can't use it right now, but I know it's their favorite place. So A, they will appreciate it at some point. B, they will be happy it survived. And C, they get to survive. Like, yep. Hopefully, I'm one gift certificate. But that's the idea, right? And I've seen people online talking that it's a dangerous time to give a gift certificate because maybe they don't make it, right? But that's a horribly cynical way to look at it. And it's not like I don't get it, but let's say you buy someone a $50 gift card to whatever and they still happen to go down before so-and-so gets to use it. If enough people are thinking the right way, that won't happen, right? And that's the way we have to view this, is just get through it as a community and, you know, go from there, hopefully. But I think you're totally right, and you know, this was something you wanted to bring up on the show, and I thought it was a great idea because, man, at this point, it's just so easy to turn around. And like you say, sometimes you just need to quickly pull out, this will be here in 3 days if I need it from Amazon or whatever.
Yeah, like it happens. I always look at it as like, if I can't get, if the only other place I can get this product is Walmart,
yeah,
then I'm probably going to buy it on
yes.
Amazon. Because then
right.
I don't have to leave the house.
And it's one big company versus another, and fuck them.
Exactly.
Right? Like, so.
I don't know if you saw this, and I meant to send it to you before we started the show, but David Chang, who's a celebrity chef, he hosts a show called Ugly Delicious on Netflix. And if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. He was
that
on
was my
the celebrity.
Nickname, by the way. Make of that what you will. It's whatever.
Think about that for a while.
Sure,
folks.
Carrying on.
He was on The Celebrity Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And yes, that show's still on.
Wow.
I think the other last night or the night before, anyway, he was obviously when celebrities do it, they do it for charity. And he was the first celebrity on the show to win $1 million.
Okay.
He got to the final thing. He won $1 million. And he's a restaurant owner. So he was supporting a charity. All that money was going to a charity that supports people in the hospitality industry who are in very much need right now.
Yep.
So that was a kind of a nice story. Like, you know, we're talking about these businesses that are really hurting, and the people who work there are really hurting. The servers and the bartenders, like, as much as the owners are hurting, most of these people are without a job.
Yes.
And anything we can do to support them. I mean, I don't know about you, but bartenders are my favorite people. Like ever. And I was a server. I was a server for 2 summers. And to this day, it is the most mentally and physically taxing job I have ever had in my life. And that will probably remain throughout my career. It's the hardest job I've ever had. And I have so much respect for anybody in that field because they work so hard.
It's hard.
And it's hard work, man. Like you could say it's fun, and I'm sure it's fun at times, but it is hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, anything we can do to support that industry right now, I think, is so important, especially as we head into the winter. You know, patios aren't open. It's that much more challenging to dine inside. As much as I'm, you know, trying to support local businesses, I'm still not comfortable dining inside.
Me neither.
So, you know, obviously we're not alone there. And
no,
you know, takeout's great, but we need to do everything we can. So yeah, like I thought it'd be nice. I know everyone knows this. I know it's kind of being shouted from the rooftops a lot right now, but
it doesn't
hurt
to drop it in there.
And this calendar is kind of a prime example of that, right? You've got 23 craft breweries from, I'd say local, but they're, like I said, they're kind of from all over southern, southeastern Ontario.
Yep.
You know, they need our support too. And what a great way to support them by not only enjoying their beer, but talking about it on this podcast.
I don't know whether you would have seen it at the time, or I know I made a big deal out of it on the pod because I was a fan. But I will admit today, instead of just Apple Music or Spotify or whatever, I have purchased a Miley Cyrus album.
That is anything but
my jam. Right. Normally. But her voice.
Which album?
Okay. Something Hearts. It's brand
new. You're obviously a big Miley fan.
No, okay. That's a fair thing. And I'm not. In the article I was reading about the album before I bought it, they just kept calling it PH. It's Princess Heart or Printed Heart or something weird like that. It doesn't matter. But I'll tell you where it came from was a few weeks ago, maybe a little bit more than that. She had performed on, and they were very cutesy with the name. It was a concert called SOS Save Our Stage, because the music industry is getting just crushed as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she performed, from the Cranberries, Zombie. And her voice, she can still boom that tune out like nobody's business, right? And I loved her version of, and I like that song. I'm a 90s kid, right? Like I was into the couple of hits that the Cranberries had at the time. And so when she did that song, I was like, that's awesome. And at some point you get sick of going to YouTube to find it when you want to hear it. But I'm at the same time, like, they're never going to put that out on an album. It was just some thing she did once. And so, sure enough, this week, they released this album. And I'm dancing around it. I wish I could remember the title. I will share it on Twitter, at TallCanAudio, if you're interested. But it had a few different covers on it. And then a couple different, you know, of her more traditional whatever, which isn't really my thing. But I loved that song. And so when you come out with a 6-song album, which is all this was, and it's like $10, whatever, you're like, yeah, like I'll do that. Like whatever. Right. I dig the tune. And a big portion of the sales of the album weren't just towards her. It was towards her crew and the industry. And you know, there's certain times where you just go, yeah, this is a worthwhile thing to do. I bought a rock concert essentially on pay-per-view, a band called the Menzingers. for $20, you got a live show to no audience, but it wasn't like a shitty, and I'm saying a shitty, I watched them all. It wasn't an Instagram live where you were watching through your phone's speakers. Like, they had producers there that if you had a nice surround system, you got the full effect of somebody producing this live. And then all that money was going towards their crew, not the band, right? The people who would help them tour and who are getting nothing right now. And then they would send you also a pint glass with the band's logo on it. Or you could pick whatever you want. I obviously picked the pint glass. But different things like that where you can, you know, you're into it anyway. You probably would have checked that out. And for $20 on a Saturday night, I think we talked about this at the time. It was Thanksgiving and I wasn't going home. And I'm like, well, then I'm going to watch this rock concert that one of my favorite bands is putting on $20 online. And they did a nice job. And so this was similar. I'm not a big Miley guy, but she has done some covers that are just outstanding. And a few of them are on this album. So I was like, yeah, I forget the Spotify download thing. I went to iTunes. I purchased the album, my first ever Miley Cyrus album.
Look at you. Plastic Hearts. I looked
that's
it up. Plastic
it,
Hearts.
Because I've
the
been
name.
Rambling for like 9 minutes. So you.
No. That gave me perfect time to look it up. Plastic. Yeah, I got to take my photos. You got to talk about
my love for Miley.
Your main girl, Miley Cyrus. It's all good. Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not so much a Hannah Montana fan, but as Miley Cyrus has matured, I've really started to like her.
Yeah.
I will admit. And her cover of Zombies was unbelievable.
It was great. And
speaking of sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, for the last 2 or 3 years, we close our New Year's Eve show with her and Adam Sandler doing No Freedom by Dido. And that was a performance that they did on the night of the shooting in Vegas in 2017, I believe. And Jimmy Fallon opens the show and he said, we've awoken to more tragedy, we've whatever, but we're here to entertain you tonight. That's what we're going to try and do. And you just kind of saw this like weird pairing of Miley Cyrus and Adam Sandler, and you're like, what are you doing
covering a Dido song?
Honestly,
like that is a combination of things.
It was so strange, right? But you know, he can play the guitar and he can sing okay. Normally he's singing about really weird shit, but he can sing. And they just did this thing and I thought it was really cool. And so at the end of the year, we did our New Year's Eve show, you know, biggest stories of the year. And it felt right to close the show with that song from the Tonight Show that night. And for whatever reason, we've just held on to it and closed every year since then with, you know, so I don't know. I kind of dig her voice. I think she's a good singer. I know she's been through some shit, back on track now and whatever else. But some of these covers that she's done over the years, I can't get enough of. So I'm not afraid to admit
that. She has the perfect voice for that kind of like glam rock cover.
That's
like
right.
she's got a great voice.
She does.
I was so speaking of music, mm-hmm. I'm gonna out myself a little bit here as a very notable hipster.
Please, if you could.
I'm part of that horrible generation that bought a record player and buys vinyl.
Yes.
And so my husband bought me a record player for Christmas last year. Mm-hmm. And since then, we have spent way more money than I want to actually count on records. I think we have like 40 or 50 records now. And it's just too much. We've fallen into this horrible addiction. And a lot of it is available on Amazon. And a lot of our records have come from Amazon. Yeah. But what we started doing, and this right before the pandemic, I went down to Toronto and I went to a record store called Sonic Boom.
Been there.
And
love it.
I spent, oh my God.
Yeah.
There's like, I can't even.
You'll sell your soul in there if they don't push you out fast enough.
Honest to God, I would have remortgaged my house if my friends didn't drag me out of there. It was, imagine like the largest HMV you could ever, you know, at the height of CD sales, you know, the biggest HMV in Toronto, but instead of CDs, it's all records.
Yeah.
All vinyl LPs. It's amazing. Anyway, so what I started doing over the summer was, instead of buying records at Amazon, I'd go to a local record store in Ottawa and try and find a record there. And that's where we tried to spend more of our money in this horrible collection that we are now accumulating. But speaking of Miley Cyrus, so we bought a Christmas record and it was a Christmas record. It's a bunch of different artists. It was it was for a charity back in, I think, the 80s. And, you know, it's got songs by U2 and Bruce Springsteen and Stevie Nicks is on it.
Nice.
And I think it's Silent Night. She's singing. And as she's singing, I'm like, is this Miley Cyrus or Stevie Nicks? Like they're, I'm a huge Stevie Nicks fan. So right. like, I know her voice very well. And I was like, honestly, I can't tell. Like Miley Cyrus has a voice very similar to Stevie Nicks. And yeah. you know, we all worship Stevie Nicks.
Of course.
Miley Cyrus deserves some credit here too.
She's getting like, to that level now, right? And that there's
she's
a great
finding
cover.
Her groove.
Yeah. There's a cover on YouTube that I only saw for the first, there was some, and again, I'll share the link if I can find it again. It was like Billboard or somebody shared a link just this week of like Miley Cyrus's top 20 covers. And there's some concert over in England or something of her performing Rebel Yell with Billy Idol. And she's nice. Killing it. Like, it's incredible. Like, you just drop her in anywhere. And like, I guess it kind of sucks that I'm only plugging her covers. Like, her type of music is not my type of music, but when she comes to my type of music, I'm like, yep, you're welcome here. Like, this is yep. awesome. So
absolutely. And I'm a big fan of covers. I love when yes. bands or artists who are from a different genre than the artist they're covering.
Yeah.
I love when they cover those songs.
Dip like your toe in there, check that out. Yeah.
It is so cool.
I grew up as a pop punk kind of kid in the late 90s, whatever. So there's a whole string of out pop goes or punk goes acoustic, punk goes pop, punk goes country, punk goes crunk, punk goes, and it's just punk bands playing other, and I'm like, yes, like I'm all over all of them, right? And some are better than others, but just hearing someone else's interpretation of the same song, it's a lot of fun. So yeah, that's my story. I've officially purchased a Miley Cyrus album. Never thought I'd see the day, but here we sit.
All right, noted Miley Cyrus fan, yes. Matt. We've now discovered something about you. Yes. I like this. This is going to come up again. I hope you know that.
Of course it is.
I'm going to send you Hannah Montana gifts from now on. Okay.
And I'm not even going to get it. Like, I don't even know. But,
neither
or
am
I'll
I,
pretend you know. Not to get it. Before we move into anything sports, we have sports topics. I just saw
this is a sports podcast.
At some point, we'll get to it. And actually, I have another you mentioned off the top of the show that we traded some pints the other day. And so I've got one of yours sitting here too, as I'm just working my way through. But before we get to any of that, just saw this on Twitter before we started recording. If by just some chance at 6 o'clock tonight, the pandemic ended for whatever reason, we're pie in the sky. There is no, forget the vaccine, forget anything else. It's just over. You're free at 6 o'clock tonight to do whatever you want. What are you doing tonight?
Oh my God.
I'm kind of tired.
First of all,
stay home.
I get, I would say I'm going on a trip, but let's be honest, I'm probably staying home. I'm already in my pajama pants. I'm almost a beer deep. Mm-hmm. I'm not going anywhere, but I'm going to start fantasizing.
If you had gotten
going
this
places.
News at noon, right?
Yeah, it may be a different story, but yeah, we're 10 to 6 at this point.
Yeah.
The first thing I'm doing, okay, let's pie in the sky. Let's pretend this all ends at 6 o'clock in some sort yeah. of weird like purge yeah. countdown.
Nobody's contagious, nothing. You're back to normal
oh,
at 6 p.m.
I am booking a trip. That'd be my, like, because I can do that from the comfort of my home. Okay. I don't have to go anywhere. I'm probably getting on my computer and crashing the Air Canada website yeah. as I'm sure I'm not the only one doing this, but yeah, I think I've talked about it on the podcast before. My honeymoon was canceled because yeah. of all this, and I have pages and pages of a Google Doc that were planning this trip. All our hotels were booked and I had everywhere we were going to go. If at 6 o'clock tonight, the pandemic ended, I am rebooking that entire trip.
Okay.
One to go on my honeymoon, and I'm sure my husband would be okay with it, but you know, he doesn't really get a say in this. But just to have something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like I forgot a couple of weeks ago we went to Mont Tremblant for a few days mm-hmm. as like a safe weekend getaway.
Yep.
And I forgot how nice it is to have something to look forward to. We only planned it like a week in advance, so it wasn't that long, but like we have not really had, you know, a mark on the calendar to right. look forward to since February or March, yeah. right? All yeah. those trips we had planned were canceled. The games we were going to go to or concerts we were going to go to, canceled.
Everything.
Just to put something in my calendar to look forward to, I think that'd be the first thing
I'm
doing.
And I open my Apple calendar all the time. I'm like, why do you keep opening this? There's nothing on it.
You're not doing anything. Well, what are you doing? 6 o'clock tonight, pandemic ends. What are you doing?
So you're going to have to stick with me because it's a little unrealistic. And honestly, it pains me as a little bit of a softie. But if I'm out as a Miley fan now anyway, what the hell difference it make? I got to get to Lindsay. My niece keeps breaking my heart telling me she misses her Uncle Matt hugs.
Aww.
And all it is, and honestly, she's getting a little old. It's going to kill me one of these days. But when she, for a couple of years, when she'd see me, because we don't see each other that often, we live 3 hours, 4 hours apart, when she would notice me at something, she'd go, Uncle Matt, and she would come running. And I would pick her up and we'd do these big spinning hugs like you see in the, you know, the movies or whatever. And now we can't get anywhere near each other, even when we're in the same town, right? And she's going to school and I'm being careful and everybody's being careful. But she said a few times to me and to her grandma, like, I really miss Uncle Matt hugs. And I'm like, aww. It breaks my goddamn heart. And so that's first. After that,
that's a good answer.
On the way back, I'm online buying tickets to any concert in within 3 hours of here. I want to see somebody perform live. And it doesn't have to be my favorite band. It just has to be even a genre that I can tolerate. I just want to be back in a live music environment. And once I have those concert tickets booked, obviously that concert's not going to happen tonight. But similar to what you said, something to look forward to again. All I'm doing is I am texting literally anyone I know within a 50-mile radius and saying, Elgin Beer Project at 9 p.m. I'll see you there, right? And just some beers in a public setting with some friends. Let's chat. Let's catch up. Let's talk. Let's just be in the same room. That's my night. I want my hug. I want my concert tickets. And then I just want to hang out with people.
What a great answer, because now I'm realizing, like, yeah, I should have said hug my family. If my mom's listening,
if you can shame me at the top, I'm shaming you back. That's how we're
It's true. I look terrible right now. Can you add me to that text chain of Elgin Beer Project?
Sure, absolutely.
Because I would 100% be there, and I live an hour away.
And our mutual friend, Chris Hoffley, we tweeted about this in the replies. He's going to be there, too. So we'll have a group of us meeting up.
Yay.
We'll be at the Elgin Beer Project as soon as it's safe to be.
Oh, that was fun. That was such a fun little fantasy world we got to live in there for a few minutes.
Now it's back to reality.
Now it's back to reality. I will say that, like, before we move on to sports, and yes, we will, but just like sticking to live music, like you brought up a really interesting point in that, like, I'm starting to forget what live music settings
honestly
sound like and feel like. And that, like, that's such a real, like, a cool experience. I think everyone should see their favorite band live,
yes,
favorite artist live once in their life. And everyone should experience live music in some sort of setting, you know, whatever kind of works for them. But it is such a unique and cool thing that, you know, we all talk about the concerts we go to. Like, mm-hmm, people will list off the concerts they've been to, and it's
the
like a bucket
times
list item.
Yeah.
Was that
the Hip 11 times? That's my
yeah
list. I had full festival pass, I believe, or five nights. I can't remember what it was. For Blues Fest this year, which I rarely do. I'll pick like two or three that I'm into and I'll just go. But there was a bunch of nights this year. And honestly, right now as I sit here, I can't even remember who I was supposed to see. But there was a few. Oh, Rage Against the Machine was coming.
Oh, yeah.
Despite it now being like Rage Along with the Machine or whatever they're up to. But like I was into that. I wanted to see. One of my five nights was Alanis. I'm fine with that. I'll go see Alanis Morissette for a night, see what she's up
Heck
to
yeah
in her hometown. And there was a few of them. I think Blink 182, as I go back to my 1998 Enema of the State kind of punk rock, whatever. There was a few different bands, and I can't even remember now, but I was so pumped for it when I got my pass, and then it was just like, oh, it's all off. And so now, if you just threw down, whether it was Montreal or Kingston or right here in Ottawa or whatever, somebody that I was even just liked, forget about loved, I'd be like, yeah, I'll be there. Like,
yeah,
a live concert would be amazing right now.
And if this pandemic has taught us anything, like when we get out of this, I think a lesson that should come out of it is like when your favorite band is even remotely in the vicinity,
yep,
and you have the means to get there, go see them.
Yes.
Because you never know. Like I've regretted so many times not, I'm going to embarrass myself again here, but when I was in college, the Spice Girls were in Toronto.
Oh. Oh, okay. And I'm so off the hook right now.
I'll get into a better one in a minute. I promise I'm not this lame, but I am a child of the 90s.
Of course.
And the price of the tickets was exactly how much I had left in my bank account for the rest of the year. So I would literally bankrupt myself. Like, this was first year university. Yep. Like, I had nothing. And so we chose not to go, and it haunts me to this day.
Wow.
So in 2018, not long before all this started happening, Florence and the Machine was in Toronto. They were going on tour. She was going on tour. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge Florence fan. Yeah. So I said, I texted my best friend. She's not a Florence and the Machine fan. I was like, I will pay for your ticket.
I've done that too. Let's go.
Somebody, so I have someone to sit with.
Yep.
Just come with me. And she was fine. She's like, yeah, I'll pay for it. It's fine. She was in Toronto on Tuesday and then Chicago on Friday. And I said, if I can't get tickets to Toronto on Tuesday, I'm going to Chicago for the weekend. Like, I do not care. I was fortunate enough to get tickets in Toronto. I went down to Toronto literally for the night, drove down Tuesday afternoon, came back Wednesday morning. And to this day, it is like, I don't have to live in this horrible 2020 right. going, what if I never get to see Florence and the Machine live?
Right.
Right. That is why, if you have the means, if you have the ability, don't make excuses, like other excuses. I know, you know, there are obvious financial reasons, sure. but if you can make it work,
yeah,
go and see your favorite band next time we are able to do that, because you will not regret it, but it will live with you for the rest of your life if you don't go.
Well, and so we've talked briefly about it on the show before. I was supposed to see like my favorite band from high school, who I still listen to, but at 37 years old, I'm kind of like, I'm just not as angry as I was. Like, I'm glad you guys can keep this going, but I'm just sort of, but I'll still go. If you come to town, I'm still going to. So that's a band called Anti-Flag. I was supposed to see them on March 11th. And if those of you who've been really paying attention know that the NBA shut down on March 12th and all the other sports on March 13th. And I had tickets. They were here in Ottawa. And I just decided, you know what? Can't risk it. Not going to do it. Not going to go. So I gave the tickets to a buddy of mine who was like, I'll go. Like, so that's fine. And I've been miffed at him ever since. But they canceled their next show after March 11th was March 13th. They're like, okay, we understand we have to shut. They canceled all their future concerts, refunded everybody, said, as soon as it's safe, we will reschedule this tour at the value that, you know, you've already paid. If you want your money back, that's fine. But if not, we're coming. But they played the Ottawa show, so they don't have to redo the Ottawa show that I backed out of. Now, I still think I made the right decision, the responsible decision, all that. But you're like, so the whole Eastern Canadian tour is going to get redone except the stop. Now, I'll go when they're back in Montreal or whatever it turns out to be. But and the only other example of what you're talking about that I can think of is that last Hip tour. I am a huge Tragically Hip fan. And we spent a boatload, but at face value, to go to one of the Toronto shows. Couldn't get, we tried, like, that's where all my buddies are from. I grew up in the GTA. So we go to the Toronto show. They end up adding a third show. We thought we were going to be the last ever show in Toronto, but turned out not to be. Who cares? We had an awesome time. The next morning, my sister, who also lives here in Ottawa, texted me and said, my friend is selling 2 second row on the floor tickets to the Ottawa show, which is 4 nights later. Do you want to go? And in my head, I'm like, yeah, what's the price tag on that look like? Because it's resale and it's on the floor. And she's into the Hip, but not the same way I am, where it was like this obsession. And she's like, they're selling the pair for $1,000, I believe. Maybe $900. I can't remember. But it was high, right? And I said, I can't justify that. I left the arena. I left the ACC last night thinking that was it. I said my goodbyes, right? I saw the show that way. I'm good. But if you want, like, if you're doing this for me, thinking I need to see them again, let it go. I'm okay. If you want to go, if you need your goodbye or whatever and can talk them down, I'm in, but not at $900 or whatever it was for the pair, not particular. And so whatever it was, $450 each ticket. I said, text your friend, tell her, try and get your $1,000, try and get your $950, whatever it was. If you can't, come back to us and let's go in at 600 for the pair, right? Like for $300, see them once more, that close on the floor, second row. Oof. I could make that happen. And but again, said to her, if this is for me, if you think you're helping me out, just let them go. But if it's for you, like, I'm obviously in too. And she texted her friend and said, go try and sell them at what you can. And if you can't, come back to us at 600 and we'll whatever. And her friend replied right away and just said, yeah, 600's fair. Just give. So now I'm pumped. I'm going to see them again. But I'm like, I just blew every dime I had on the Toronto show. And now I need to come up with another 300 plus pints plus whatever. Right. Like, but you were never going to see it again. And sure enough, you didn't. Like, that was the last tour they ever did. And it was my favorite band ever. So at the time, you're like, this is probably not the most responsible thing I've ever done, but I'm never going to get to do it again. And I'm so glad I saw that second show. Like, it was great. And, but, you know, like, living in the real world, that wasn't a smart decision.
No.
But living in your own world where you're like, this is it. This is your last shot. You're not going to the Kingston show. Yeah, just do it. If you can,
and we
just
were,
do it.
I don't want to say privileged, but like, you know, we knew that that was the last tour,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We don't often know that with other
That's
artists.
Right.
Like, I'm a big classic rock fan, despite the fact that I've just talked about how much I miss the Spice Girls. I'm a big classic rock fan. So a lot of the artists I want to see, I don't know if they'll be on tour in 2 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, they're getting to that age where,
yep,
unfortunately, you know, time catches up with you. And I went to see Tom Petty when I was in university.
Oh, awesome.
And I think I was in third year. So I, you know, maybe a little more financially well off than I was in first year, but not much. Like,
right,
I did not have a lot of money. I think tickets were like $170 a piece. We drove into Toronto. We were living in St. Catharines at the time, and we drove into Toronto for a night, like, not a cheap night.
No.
But he ended up dying, what, 6 or 7 years later.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't regret a single. I do not think about that money at all. I think about that concert.
Of course, yeah.
And I think about the fact that I got to see him one more time.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I didn't go to the Blues Fest show where he was here because I was away. But, like, you know, that was the one and only time in my life I would have gotten to see Tom Petty, and I did.
Yeah.
Right? That's it, and it's a wildly privileged position that I'm in that
sure.
case. But I, you know, you never know when your favorite artist is just never going to be on tour again for various reasons.
Yeah. Well, Neil Young is one of those I got.
Oh,
not
God,
quite the
yes.
same as it, but I got to see Neil Young with, I didn't know
Did
shit
you?
About, yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
I didn't get to, I barely knew anything about Neil Young until I went to college with a bunch of my buddies who smoked just a butt ton of pot all the time. And
yeah, makes
I
sense.
Was more of like a casual Saturday night. I'll get in a little bit, but I was more of a peer than a weed guy, but they loved weed and they loved Neil Young. And a year or two after we graduated, he was on tour coming to the Air Canada Center, and I initially passed, and then someone else backed out because they were ridiculously expensive tickets to see Neil Young at the ACC, and I passed, and someone else backed out at the last minute, and I said to my buddy, yeah, like, I was already regretting that I wasn't coming. And so, first of all, it was kind of a reunion with those guys, right, that you'd went to school with. But then this show that he put on, and it's just him and a piano and a guitar and his wife who plays some of the songs with him. And you're at the time, the guy's like 108 years old. This could be the last. It turned out not to be the last. I don't know that he's toured that big again, but he's still kicking, luckily.
Oh, yeah.
But that was one of those shows where you're just like Neil Young in Toronto with your college buddies, high as shit. Like,
that's the dream.
Yes. Like, you just, if you can, you have to.
Yeah.
And I know all this stems from this conversation of what would you do if you suddenly could again. But those are the types of things that you think about. If the pandemic ends at 6 o'clock tonight, Neil Young is not suddenly at Canadian Tire Center, right? But those are the things that...
I'm not that lucky.
Right, that are being taken away from us right now, because it has to be. I'm not saying that negatively, but if all of a sudden, like, the pandemic is over tonight and whatever, Anti-Flag is downtown tomorrow night picking up their concert, I'm like, yeah, I'll be there. Cool, see you, right? Like,
it's just, it's always important to remember, like, you know, do it while you can.
Yeah.
Because nothing is guaranteed. This year has taught us that.
That's
nothing
right.
is guaranteed.
We have learned that in spades.
Neil Young is on my bucket list of concerts to see, because the one time he came to Ottawa, I was in school living in St. Catharines and couldn't get home in time.
Oh, no.
And I didn't, I can't remember when he was in Toronto for whatever reason. I think it lined up perfectly where, like, I was back home in Ottawa while he was in Toronto and he was in Ottawa while I was in the GTA. Anyway, it sucked. But he's one of those artists who I'm like, God, please just.
One more tour.
Go on
Come
tour.
On, man.
One more tour. Please do a concert series or something after this is all over.
We'll go.
Because I cannot live with myself if I don't get to see Neil Young. But anyway, all that is to say, when this is over, I think it all teaches us a lesson of do it while you can, because nothing is guaranteed. This is a sports podcast, so we're going to get to some sports. Sports happen. Sports are not happening, but they're still happening.
Can I put off the sports one last time? Because I have one last beer to crack.
Oh, perfect.
Because I'm through the first beer. And
I'm just, you know what? That amber went down so smooth.
It was nice. It was nice. And this is one of the ones you traded off with me in the parking lot.
What are you going with?
So I am back at the Crooked Mile Brewing Company. And you had said you had gone out of your way to bring me some dark beer. And I have grabbed what obviously is going to be one. This is the Black Dog Dry Irish Stout. Have you tried this one before I crack?
I have not. I've got two sitting in my fridge downstairs. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go on what you tell me about this.
All right. That's a lot of pressure.
No pressure.
And we talked, when we met the other day, that I'd been pushing you, or you had been moved into the stout direction just a little bit, just trying a few more darks and little whatever. So this I appreciated. I don't try a ton from the Crooked Mile, and as I've said, it's far, right?
It is far. It's not far. Easy to get to.
But a dry Irish stout is always a welcome treat, so I'm going to give that a go right now.
Perfect. I haven't tried it myself. I've got that and their Uptown Breakfast in my fridge downstairs that I'm looking forward
Uptown
to trying. But
nice.
Right? I have been moving more into the stouts. It started with Guinness. I think I talked about this on the show before, but I'm a big fan of Guinness. And I just couldn't get into other stouts, but slowly I've been trying more and more. And, I started with the Cobblestone from Mill Street that I'm a big fan
That's
of.
Nice
and it's
beer,
very
yeah.
similar to Guinness. It's very smooth. And then I think Ridge Rock has an Irish stout that I really like.
Oh, yeah.
And Whitewater, their Midnight Stout, is fairly good as well. So, it's not my go-to beer unless I'm sitting in like a dark pub, which obviously, as I talked about, we're not doing right now.
Right.
I'm very rarely in the mood for a stout, but now that we're in the winter, I think I'll probably expand my horizons a little bit. Part of my honeymoon was supposed to be going to Ireland.
Right.
So I was going to be drinking a lot of stouts in dark Irish pubs. I was very much looking forward to that. So I think I'm just trying to live out my honeymoon and drink as many stouts as possible. But it is something I'm slowly expanding my palate into.
Right.
So
this is delightful.
Is it?
Yes.
It
is dry, but not as dry as I would expect when you put it right there in the title, which I'm fine with, because often the really dry ones that they advertise and that isn't really my style. This is a nice blend. It had us almost like a cocoa or something to it. That it's not sweet, but it just towards the end, you get just this hint of something cocoa or chocolate, or maybe just a little coffee or something, right? But it's really nice. This is the Black Dog Dry Irish Stout from Crooked Mile, and it's hitting me just right as we sit here right now.
Perfect. Well, I know it's far, but if you ever need someone to make a Crooked Mile run for you, I will volunteer as tribute. on the vein of supporting local, I'm
obviously
very much trying to support them right now, and they're one of my favorite breweries, and they happen to be walking distance from my house. The two are not related. but I do want to, they're a small enough brewery that I genuinely worry in times like this. I know they're doing well in terms of delivery and stuff like that, but you just want to support them in any way that you can. So I am happy to make a Crooked Mile run anytime you need.
Gorgeous,
in the name of supporting
this
brewery.
Is a repeat beer for sure. And we used to call, it wasn't close to a mile, but our local watering hole down in Belleville where I went to college was just a block or two from a house. No surprise there. And it wasn't close to a mile when you went down there. But as you walked home after way too many, we used to call that the crooked mile, because you, by the time you wavered back and forth and a couple of staggers here and there, it was a slightly further walk home than it was on the way there. But yeah, this, the Black Dog Dry Irish Stout from Crooked Mile, big time thumbs up. So
awesome. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah, it's a very aptly named brewery. I will say that. let's get into some sports, shall we? Because sports
did we
are
do
happening.
That here?
Is that... And we're an hour in. But there's not a lot of sports happening, so that's good. I'm glad we filled the time with stuff that was actually really fun to talk about.
For sure.
You know, fantasies and stuff. But there were some sports happening, and a pretty big moment in sports this past weekend when Sarah Fuller of Vanderbilt became the first woman to play in a Power 5 conference football game as a kicker. So some history being made by Vanderbilt here, and of course it wasn't without its controversy.
Right.
A lot of, you know, anytime a woman is involved in sports, people get mad.
Boo.
So that happened. Yeah. But you know, again, we've talked about this on the show before. Those people don't deserve our time. This was a great moment for a team that's really struggling and could use some sort of positivity. It certainly was. They literally did not have anybody to kick for them. So they called on the goalkeeper for Vanderbilt's soccer team, the women's soccer team.
Yep.
Sarah Fuller, she came in and made history.
What did you make of it? Well, maybe before we get into anything else, you called it correctly, the first woman to play in a Power 5 conference game. Was she not the first woman to play in an NCAA football game? I'm not familiar with all these conferences. I know the NCAA is big. I know. Do you understand better than I do what that meant or what the context was there? Because there can't be many women who've played NCAA football ahead of her, you know, in whatever conference.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I read that and thought, okay, so obviously woman has played somewhere else.
Yes.
And I am the first to admit that, aside from like watching here and there when there's big moments or when I'm just in the mood for some football on a Saturday.
American college football.
Not a big college football fan.
Right.
For various reasons. Every time I try to get into to college football, the team that I try to cheer for does something terrible. For example, I tried to be an Ohio State fan 2 years ago.
Oh, boy.
I'll leave it at that.
Yep.
And that, I think, it just speaks volumes to the culture within high college
State.
Football.
Oh, no.
Ew, right. Whoops.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really hard to get behind these teams.
It really
like
is.
They keep doing terrible things. So I'll admit, I am not the biggest college football fan. I tried to find what they were referring to when they mentioned, you know, the Power 5 conference. And that, so obviously a woman has to have played somewhere else, and I can't find it.
Could be Division 3, no one's ever heard of somewhere, right? And so they just have to, you know, they can't call it first ever NCAA. But still, as you referenced, an incredible set of circumstances make this happen. Obviously, every week the NCAA is canceling like 15, 20 games because half these teams have COVID. So the kicker,
it's almost as if playing during COVID wasn't a good
idea, isn't it? Yeah. Vanderbilt was down a pile of athletes and needed a kicker. And so, yeah, you go to the goalkeeper for the women's soccer team, because obviously they have some experience in just trying to boot it as far away as you can. And what did you make? Because, again, I barely follow this. Maybe you've paid more attention. It wasn't a great kick. But I've also read that, you know, there is time where that strategy, right, where you're trying to squib and get it off a little bit closer, almost like an onside. Or do you think maybe the nerves just got to her and it was... I think it's worth talking about, only because we've seen it happen to a million kickers over the year. I don't think we have to pretend it didn't happen. It's still a huge moment, and she still earned her opportunity to do it. But I can't imagine any scenario where a coach looks at the first woman who's going to kick in this conference and says, hit me with the squib, right? Like, I just can't see that. I do think something went wrong there, not to take away from the accomplishment at all, but it has, of course, led to... your troglodytes with their knuckles dragging on the ground. This is why you don't let... Stop. We've seen it a thousand times.
Yeah, because male kickers have never missed
a kick. Never. What did you make of the whole thing when you watched it?
Chicago Bears fans would have something to say about that. I think there's a lot going on there, right? And again, I don't know enough about NCAA football to know what the strategy is here. You know, what I know that kicks... In general, they will look very similar to the NFL, but it isn't the NFL, right? That's there right. isn't that same experience level. She's coming in from soccer. She did share on Twitter, I think it was before she stepped on the field, you know, she said, I'm just going to leave this here. And it was a video of her basically launching a goal kick all the way to the other end
of the field. I saw that. Yeah. Like right? just powered it like 80% of the way down the field.
Yeah. The girl's got a leg. The girl can kick. There's no doubt about that. And yeah. you know what? It's she's wearing full football equipment in
Probably
this situation.
For the first time ever.
As a soccer player, you're not used to that.
That's right.
I don't know if you guys know this, but a football is different than a soccer ball.
Yeah, slightly different
so there's
shape.
Also that.
Yep.
And you've got the pressure of being the first woman to do this.
Yeah, you're on national television.
Like, there's a lot
television.
Going on.
Yeah.
And I think that any kicker, regardless of what their background is leading up to this, any kicker in their first game, you know, you've got to get timing right. You've got mm-hmm. there's differences in doing a kickoff for a football game than there is in doing a goal kick for a soccer team.
Yep.
So I think it's just experience. Like, she's a great kicker, but obviously the football side of things, and again, she could have a ton of football experience, and I just don't know about it because I've heard about as much about her as your average kind of football fan
of course,
has, right?
Which is nothing.
In that, exactly. She just she popped onto my radar this weekend. I thought it was amazing.
Your most hardcore NCAA football fan did not know the name Sarah Fuller last Wednesday.
Exactly.
Nobody
exactly.
did.
It doesn't change. This is my view. It doesn't change how I feel about the moment, and it doesn't change how I feel about her. Every kicker has kicks like that.
Yeah.
Male or female, experienced or inexperienced, those moments are going to happen. And there's a variety of reasons that may have contributed to it, none of which I could even speculate on. So I think it was, you know, like you said, it doesn't take away from the moment. It was a huge moment. It was really cool to watch. I think, like I said, you know, 2020 has been crap.
Yes.
And it's nice every now and then to get moments like
this.
And I know people will say, oh, it's a publicity stunt, whatever. Like, what is Vanderbilt drawing attention to? Their 0-8 record? Like, is that what they're hoping we're going to be talking about in this? Like, they're not exactly a team that wants
no.
to be shouting from the rooftops what the record is
well,
right
and
now.
The only
they
other thing you're
kicker.
Drawing any attention to is our whole team has COVID. We've handled this terribly. Yeah,
yeah
that's probably
yeah,
what
great
they
publicity
wanted to
stunt,
do.
Guys. Yeah. I know NCAA schools and teams are not exactly the best at PR, but I'm pretty
right.
sure they're not
this, wasn't
this bad.
A, right.
Exactly. It wasn't. I don't think it was about publicity. I think, and even if it was, it was still a good moment. It was a great moment to watch.
You and I have talked about Manuel Rayom with the Lightning and how that was clearly a publicity stunt to get the Lightning on the map. We've talked about Shannon Zabados practicing with the Oilers and how that clearly wasn't. What do you think of... in the set, like, as we look at this one, we've talked about the idea of women not playing against men. That's never been the idea, right? It's can we put a spotlight on women's sports? There is no women's equivalent to NCAA football. There is no women's equivalent right now to the NFL. Did you have any reservations when you heard that this was going to happen long before the kick didn't go well or whatever? Of a woman playing, like being in the game, or, you know, is it just we're looking for the best kicker on campus and it's clearly her right now who's not laid up in a fucking ICU or whatever?
I genuinely believe that it was the latter. I in this situation, I think it literally was, we have no one else who has even the slightest experience in kicking. Like, even on the team, the most was like the guys had played football when they were 12, or sorry, soccer when they were 12.
Yeah.
Like if they were on the team but didn't kick, the most soccer experience they had was years ago. I think in this situation, it was about, we don't have a kicker. We need a kicker.
Yeah.
This girl can kick. Let's do it.
Right.
But I think that football is a different area. You know, I've talked about this on the show before, but like, I don't think that female hockey players need to play in the NHL. I think they need their own viable and well-supported league.
Right.
Because I want to watch that. I want to watch the best women's hockey players in the world face off against each other.
Right.
I don't need to see them facing off against Sidney Crosby. That's, in my mind, they're two different things.
Yeah.
With football, it's different because, like you said, there isn't a football league for women that's equivalent.
Right.
If female football is starting to get more recognition, especially at the grassroots level, mm-hmm. but it is nowhere near what, you know, women's hockey is.
No.
So I'm a little more lenient when it comes to this stuff because, like, you know, people like Sarah Fuller, if they wanted to play football, they don't have anywhere
else
to go.
Right.
And if they're genuinely that talented, football is one of those highly positional games where you could probably make it happen.
Yeah.
Right? Like, people will come in with their, you know, biology and women are smaller arguments. But, like, you know, if they're a kicker, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the average NFL kicker, but they're not exactly Hulk Hogan.
No. Yeah, no one asked her to line up on the defensive line against some 350-pound monster.
But she is 6'2", and she can, and she has a massive leg.
Yes.
So why not have her kick, right? Like, she,
right.
If we're going to argue biology here, obviously she has the make of a perfectly good kicker. So why not? Like,
but once you're in that position, like, if that ball's coming back, like, technically she's in play. She's got to try and make a tackle. She's got to. Are we good with that?
I think I am. Okay. I think if she's comfortable with it, I am.
Yeah. Well, and that's like it. Said, like, no one forced her to go do it. So
exactly.
Obviously she understood the responsibility. And
she didn't come in and say, hey, I want to do this. They were literally looking for a kicker.
Yes.
And she said, yeah, I can do it.
Right.
But, like, she didn't go looking for it. So it's such a unique situation from what we're normally seeing with women being involved in men's sports.
Yeah.
And I think for that reason, like, I'm very much okay with it. I when Carly Lloyd practiced with, I think it was the Eagles earlier, believe it or not, I think that was early in 2020.
I believe it was. I think.
But, like, that would make sense to me because, like, she was going in as a kicker, and that is very it's positional, right? And she's got a leg.
But you are not assured of no physicality.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I think you take that risk.
Yep.
And I think as long as, like, I'm looking at, you know, the Gostkowskis of the world, who I'm used to as a Pats fan, I don't feel overly confident in him making a tackle.
No, that guy's
tackle.
Getting run the hell over, too. Yeah.
And most kickers in general, like,
of
they're
course.
Super skinny
You're
guys.
Right. You're right.
So they're probably
Luchenko
not.
Luchenko learned nothing.
And I don't know if you've ever seen Tom Brady try to make a tackle, but there are some, no matter how you good at. No matter how good you are at certain positions,
Tom Brady is the prettiest girl who's ever played in the in
I love
pro
Tom
football.
Brady, but I hate him at the same time. I have very complicated feelings about Tom Brady right now.
We all do.
I don't want to get into it. It's been hard.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, so, you know, it's an area that I think
I think
we
it's
could
real,
talk for hours about.
Right?
It.
It's real.
This felt genuine to me. What does Vanderbilt have to gain?
That's right. You'd love to see the Disney thing where she comes out and makes the perfect kick and pins them on their own 7-yard line, you know, with the that's not life. It has nothing to do with your gender. Sometimes you come in and go, oh man, that sucked. And, you know, like, whether she was asked to do that or whether that was just the circumstance, that sometimes happens and it has very little to do with the gender and to see the Twitter storm of that's why you don't let a girl just stop. Like, just figure
Come
it
on,
out.
Man. Like, I'll talk to you next time, you know, your kicker
Anybody.
Whiffs on a kick or,
like,
or misses a field goal.
We've all seen it, right? From Canadian football, American football, your guy comes out and shanks and you're like, you just fucking pinned us in our...
Yep.
But nobody talks about it on Monday because, you know, he's just a kicker and nobody cares, right? But here you go, and this was a big moment, and I have no idea what's coming this weekend and whether she'll have the chance to do it again or whether some people will be healthy or what Vanderbilt's season looks like moving forward. But it was a cool moment, and I think I like this one better because I'm not a Disney guy. I'm a Miley guy, but I'm not a Disney guy, and it's not always the perfect ending, right? It just doesn't always work out that way.
If you're a sports fan, you know that, right? Yeah. I think that's why I have such a problem with sports movies, is because it's never worked out that way for me. And I hate seeing happy endings to sports movies, because I know that's not reality.
Minutes left in the movie and our character's in a tough spot. I bet I know what's about to happen. Right?
If I'm a Sens fan, I'm leaving. Yeah, like, no. I know how this goes. I'm out.
Really? You got to that before this Leafs fan? Fair enough.
Speaking of fan bases who are often struggling, the Jays fans got some kind of exciting news this week with the prospect of this. I was about to say the Sky Dome. The Rogers Center.
Yeah.
The Sky Dome. Let's call it what it is. The Sky Dome.
The Dome, yeah.
The Dome being demolished and a more, I guess I'll say, traditional ballpark being erected in downtown Toronto. What'd you think about that?
I was intrigued. I think for years now, since Shapiro has come in and said, you know, the Dome needs renovations badly. And the old concrete convertible, I've seen some cool things down there. I have time for it, but it is a relic. And when it opened in 89, and Richard Petty, who former president of MLSE, but was also the president of the Dome when it opened for the first several years, he said they opened that thing in 89, and immediately they had competitive Blue Jay teams. They had WrestleMania 6 in front of a record crowd. They had the Pope in there. Like, they were drawing giant crowds. They drew 36,000 people to watch the series finale of Star Trek The Next Generation on the big screen. People wanted to go. Do not laugh. I love Captain Picard, okay?
I watched Disney on Ice at the Sky Dome.
Okay. Right? So, but he said in 92, the thing's 3 years old, he goes to Baltimore and sees what they've built, and he's like, oh, we're fucked. We're so fucked. Like, that's it. The era of the multi-use stadium is over. We've got Olympic Stadium in Montreal. We've got Oakland Alameda. And we've, like, there's some places that are doing it. Pittsburgh, I think it was called Three Rivers. There's some stadiums like that. Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. He goes, this thing they've built in Baltimore is gorgeous. No one will ever build another multi-use, okay for everything, but good for nothing stadium. People will build real ballparks now.
Yeah.
And it was immediately obsolete. You got away with it because the Jays had competitive teams for the next several years, sold that thing out constantly. But it was out of date almost immediately, and it's hung on another 27, 28 years. But it's time, and it's not a great place to see a ball game. It's not a great place to see a football game, which we saw with the Bills in Toronto and the Argos over the year. It's not a great place to see a baseball game, I can remember seeing a concert there. This was right before the big SARS Fest concert in 03 at Downsview with the Rolling Stones and AC/DC and Justin Timberlake. They tried a different SARS fundraiser that was simulcast. You would see one band at the Dome, and then when they went off stage, you would watch another band who was on stage at the ACC. And that one would be live, and fans at the ACC would see that in person, but you would be watching it on TV, and then they would switch back and forth and back and forth. I can remember, and I only bring it up because Bare Naked Ladies came out as the second last band at the Sky Dome. And about an hour earlier, Our Lady Peace was playing on stage at the Sky Dome. And Bare Naked Ladies, their front man, Stephen Page, he goes, how's it going, Toronto? We're happy to be here. Shout out to everyone up on the fifth deck who's still listening to Our Lady Peace echoing around up there. It's just not a great place for a concert either, right? And it was okay for a lot of stuff, but it wasn't good for anything. And so as Shapiro's been talking about renovating it, you're talking about having to knock out like half the building to make it like somewhat outdoorsy, but then the roof still has to work. And it won't once you knock down a bunch of walls. It doesn't work if there's 3 centimeters of snow on top of it. It's not going to work once you knock down some walls and stuff. I wasn't shocked to see that they're kicking around the idea of a new ballpark, but it's so complicated, right? Rogers owns the building, but they don't own the land. That belongs to the Canadian government. If you were going to tear it down and rebuild, where do the Jays play for what's going to be a good 2 or 3 seasons? This is a big deal, but it still feels really far away.
Yeah. My approach when I heard this news was to try not to get too bogged down in the fact that I may not live to see this. Like, just knowing the red tape they're going to have to cut through to make this happen makes me nauseous.
At three levels of government, right? Like, it's insane.
Obviously, this is something that we are going to have to wait years and years and years to see. But
like, call me in 2030. Like, legit. Yeah, that's when we're talking.
But I'm willing to wait because honestly, like to your point, I think Adam Wilde of Virgin Radio in Toronto tweeted this. You know, the Rogers Centre is a jack of all trades and a master of none.
Yep.
And that model didn't work in the 90s and it doesn't work now.
Right.
When you think of the iconic parks in the MLB that people build trips around, it's Wrigley, it's Fenway, it's Camden. Those are highly specific.
Well, even some of the new ones, right? Arizona,
parks.
Just because in center field, they got a pool and a what do they call it? Like from the fairs, the big wheel that you sit on. And it goes up. Ferris wheel. Thank you.
There we go.
San Francisco, you're hitting home runs out into the bay. Like, there's just, there's cool ballparks, man. And
listen, I know that it's nice to have a roof covering you, but rain delays are something we've just become accustomed to as MLB fans. It just happens. We deal with it. As a fan, is it the most fun? Probably not. But is it worth it for, you know, the handful of perfect Saturday afternoon games you're going to have with the CN Tower in the background, the Toronto skyline? Like, I know when the dome opens up, it's great, but we got to wait for the dome to open up. And it's this weird thing. Like, just build a ballpark. Build a ballpark, man. Like, if don't be an MLB team if you're not willing to deal with the, you know, repercussions that come with having a ballpark. I'm all for this. I realize it's going to take years to actually get to witness this, but speaking of things that you don't want to regret not doing, I will 100% be buying tickets to this stadium whenever it's built.
And it's not like, are our winters that much worse than what they get at Yankee Stadium or at Fenway?
Not in Toronto. Right. Definitely not in Toronto. Like, right. I don't know if you've ever been to Toronto in the winter, but the snow melts the second it hits the ground.
And it's cold, but like, Minnesota has a field. It's an outdoor field with a retractable, like, the dome is a closed building with the ability to open. Minnesota's Target Field is an open field with the ability to put a rain shield over top of it. It might still be -4, right? But it's still open, right? Like, you will be cold, but you won't be wet. And there are multiple stadiums set up like that now. And I think we have to decide in Toronto as Jays fans, we good with that? Like, do we need to be indoors or do we just need to be dry? Because I think those are two very different. Like, we don't have to.
And they're achievable.
Go, yeah, of course.
Like,
and we don't have to be dry. Right. We don't have to go back to, you know, the X, right? Like, which was just a disaster with the wind blowing off the lake and it was freezing cold all the time and there was no lid. You have to have a lid. But are we prepared for the first couple weeks of April and ideally a couple of weeks in late October to be cold? Because I'll tell you what, New York and Boston are prepared to be cold. Minnesota's prepared to be cold. Cleveland's prepared to be cold.
Chicago.
Yep. We don't have to be indoors. You just need a lid. And those are two different things. The building we have now is a closed building with the ability to kind of open up a little. The rest of these now are being built as open air fields with the ability to just, you know, slide an umbrella over top and the wind will still blast through, but the game will continue because the players are dry. And to me, that's what they should be looking at. And I wonder what your take is on the fact that this is, if they're going to tear down the dome, you're talking about years of playing somewhere else before another park is built on that spot. And it's owned by the Canadian government. The building, like I said, is owned by Rogers. The land is owned by the Canadian government. Can the Jays survive at like the University of Guelph for 3 years or something while you tear it down and build a new field? Or does this end up, and this is sort of what I think, you know, there's some horse trading that goes on for a while here. The land gets given back and the Jays maybe build in a couple of different neighborhood possibilities down by the lake where you could keep playing in the dome until your new park is built, right? There's a difference between play here until the new one is built versus play here, get out, tear it down, wait, and reopen.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one, in that, you know, that part of the city is much more open than it looks from far away. There are spots that you could build.
The lakefront, you mean?
The lakefront, yes. There's property that, you know, they could buy. Yes, there are building. You know, there are even buildings that may not be, the companies may be willing to move. There's a lot of office space down in that area that are in like old warehouses.
Yes.
That I'm sure those companies would be willing to move. There's more space than what looks from far away.
Absolutely.
I think you could make it work where you actually build on a different spot and then tear the Rogers Center down. And if they have to do it where they tear down and rebuild, I mean, hey, Montreal, listen, can we borrow your space? I'm not saying it'll happen, but I'd rather that than like the Jays playing in Buffalo or Tampa or whatever they're doing now. You know, maybe there's a deal that can be worked out somewhere else. You know, given the Jays' attendance, maybe they can come to RCGT Park here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. I know I'm just being tongue in cheek here, but like, I think there's a way around it where they probably don't have to tear down and rebuild and then play.
Yeah. And I think
it's,
go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, it's a long shot. There's a lot that has to happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like we're in such preliminary talks about this, at least as fans, that I'm willing to hear anything at this point.
For me, I've been reading so much about this, and I've spent so much time at the Dome and down in there. Like, there was a time where they could have just moved across the street south. That's also federal land, and it is historically protected. But you could have put up, at times, a 20,000, 25,000 seat temporary stadium while you redid. That's gone. The way the roundhouse is built up now with Steam Whistle and the historic yards there at the train yards, there's a couple of other little businesses. Like, things have kind of closed in around the dome. And the other thing is, we've all seen 100 times on TV or on YouTube or whatever, where you bring in this controlled demolition and there's some TNT around the outside and it just kind of implodes into itself. That's not the dome. The dome is built to withstand a nuclear blast. It will take 18. Look, I grew up in a construction family. That's what I'm not an expert, but I can tell you this is not LS Dawn, you know, coming in and just taking this down and hauling the concrete. This is going to be a year and a half and of just blowing through concrete. It's going to take forever. How many people who live downtown and own those condos are going to put up with that for that long? How many people who run businesses down there? What is the environmental impact of, I'm telling you, this is not one day of controlled implosion like we're used to seeing. That thing is built for a blast, and it's going to, that's a year and a half at least to take that building down before you ever start rebuilding. And so that's why I think eventually Rogers and the Canadian government horse trade a little here, right? We'll give you, like, we're going to take down the building. We're going to play here until our new park down on the lake is open. And then we're just going to give the land back to you. But maybe you'll give us an off ramp from the gardener, right? Right into our building. Maybe you'll help us with, like, there's a lot that goes into this. I don't think once they move out of the dome that they're coming back to that spot. I think the Canadian government will temporarily hold that land, find that in that particular location at the end of the Skywalk and right downtown like that, it's going to be a nice place to sell that to developers for condos and commercial real estate. I don't think at the end of the, and this is just, I'm just spitballing, but kind of understanding the area and the business a little bit. This is going to be a move, not a rebuild. I think because you can then play right up until the new one's open and then turn the keys back over to the government, let them do whatever they want with it at that point. Right.
I mean, build me a condo right where the bat flip home run landed, and I'm there. I will buy that. No, I think you're right. I think that is the most ideal situation because A, it probably gets bums and seats a lot faster.
Yeah.
And B, it might make the most sense just from a logistical standpoint. Like you said, Skydome ain't going to go down too easy.
Well, no, for sure. Right? And like, let's say, and I know I'm rambling a little, and this is, whatever. That's what happens here. When Rogers redoes this, they will want to do, for our Ottawa listeners, like a scaled up but version of Lansdowne. They're going to build a nice new outdoor ballpark, but they're going to want commercial space around it. They're going to want bars, mm-hmm. and they're going to want restaurants, and they're going to want condos and all these sorts of things. You're not licensed for that right now. You would have to go back to the Canadian government and say, okay, we're going to blow out the dome. We're going to go play for somewhere else for 3 years. And when we come back, it's not just a new, like a 30,000 seat outdoor ballpark will take up a fraction of the space that the current Skydome does, but they're going to want to put up condo buildings there and a bar and a restaurant and a whatever that the Canadian government currently doesn't license them to do. And the Canadian government might just tell them if this is going to turn into commercial land, we'll sell it, right? Like, we'll make the money off that. Well, it's complicated. It really is. This is not just a move to a new place. This is a commercial company on federal land and with years of work in between what's there now and what could be there in the future.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really great point. The loose moose is only going to get you so far for pre-game drinks.
No,
so do I.
No, that's not true. Yeah, no, do not disrespect the loose moose. It's everything you need it to be pre and post game.
But it will only go so far, right? Yes. Like, there's only so much space in there. You need more loose moose.
I don't care if the new ballpark's in Hamilton. I'm going to the loose moose after the game. I'll be back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Now that we have fantasized about a post-pandemic world and gotten to a little bit of sports talk, I think I've taken up enough of your time tonight, Matt. I think we can probably wrap things up, unless there's anything else you want to get to before we head out.
No, I think you're right. I think we took a little time getting to the sports part of it, but I like the beginning of the show as well. So I think we can probably wind her down here.
Awesome. Yeah, you know what? I did too. Anytime I get to talk about concerts and trips that we'll eventually take when all this is over,
beers.
It's a good time. And you know, shout out to Nita Beer Company because this first beer of the day one of the advent calendar, the Blue Amber, was delicious.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait to see what's day two. Yep. I told myself I wasn't going to drink every day.
Oh, that's cool.
I don't know. Yeah.
It's hard.
It's gonna
Once
be hard.
It's right there and you want to peek and you whatever, if you'll allow me just before we get out, I want to tee up. We do have, it is World Junior season. Gord Miller is going to be on the show in the next week or two.
Nice.
We'll talk to him a little about his career, but mostly, you know, we want to know World Junior stories and what he's expecting out of this year's tournament. And that's got its own headaches right now, but we're going to ask him about that. And also, especially if you've been following us on Twitter, some of you will already know this. Brad Sinopoli of the Ottawa Red Blacks is going to be on the show, I believe, next week. We've been talking to our mutual friend, Chris Hoffley, who's the communications director over at the Ottawa Sports and Entertainment Group. And he has hooked that up. Man, one of the best receivers in the league, let alone best Canadian receivers. So I'm really excited that Brad's going to be on the show as well. So we got lots of great stuff coming. Michaela's going to be back on here as we work our way through the calendar, as she needs an excuse, apparently, to not drink every day or maybe drink every day. There's a calendar.
We'll see
now.
How it goes. Check back with me in a couple days. And obviously, I will be here and I will give you an update as to how my willpower went. Kudos on the Brad Sinopoli get, by the way. He's an awesome, awesome guy. Awesome interview. I can't wait to hear that one.
And make sure you go back if you haven't as well. We referenced Andy Nita was on episode 760. Haley Salvian was episode 759. She was so much fun to talk about.
Haley!
She said multiple times during the show and then apologized afterwards, sorry, sometimes I tend to ramble. And I'm like, people hear plenty from me all the time. Like, you should. And, like, today is no shrinking violet in terms of that regard, in terms of rambling. But Haley was fantastic. Tons of sense talk, tons of talk about her career as well and what this upcoming season might look like. So that was episode 759. All of them are at tallcanaudio.com or wherever you're listening to this one. So between Haley Salvian, between Andy Nita, Gordon Miller, Brad Sinopoli, there is something for everyone kicking around right now at tallcanaudio.com.
Absolutely. Hey, do you want to host this show, Matt? You're kind of good at it.
Well, I just don't know when to shut up, so... I gotta pimp
them all. It's almost like you've done this before.
A time or two.
Like you said, Tallcan Audio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find me on Twitter at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S. Matt will tell you it's pronounced Shreeds.
Nope, Screeds.
It's Screeds. There's so many ways that people mispronounce my name. I actually get them mixed up. But whatever you call me, I am at S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me at Crafted in the Capital on Instagram. And I will be Instagramming every day the beer from the calendar. So you can follow along there as well. I'm sure Tallcan Audio will be doing something similar.
We will.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. And then for Matt Robinson, not Matthew, Matt Robinson, I am Michaela Schrader. Thank you so much for listening to Tallcan Audio.
If y'all ain't got nothing else for me to drink, I'm a haul ass. No, I'm serious. I'm about to haul ass. If y'all have no better shit than this to drink.
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at tallcanaudio.com or by searching Tallcan Audio on your favorite podcast app.